from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. We all know Abraham Lincoln, the great emancipator, the Civil War leader carved in marble. And we know young Abe, the rail splitter, the great icon promoted by his presidential campaign managers. But the man in between, learning from life on the frontier, not so clear. Next week, Daniel Day-Lewis takes on the Lincoln role in Steven Spielberg's new film. Today, we take on the making of Lincoln the man. This hour on Point, Abraham Lincoln's long Illinois years before the presidency. You can join the conversation. Are you still drawn to Lincoln? Was his the kind of seasoning deep in the grain of life that all our presidents still need? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. In a moment, we'll look back to the years before Lincoln became the man we all know. But first, to the big new film, out next week, Daniel Day-Lewis as Abe Lincoln, Steven Spielberg directing. Here's a bit from the trailer.
Shall we stop this bleeding? Abolishing slavery settles the fate for millions now in bondage and unborn millions to come.
It's either the amendment or this Confederate peace. You cannot have both.
No one's loved as much as you by the people. Don't waste that.
How many hundreds of thousands have died during your administration?
We must cure ourselves of slavery. This amendment is that cure. The fate of human dignity is in our hands. Blood's been spilled to afford us this moment. Now, now, now.
Now, 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 says Daniel Day-Lewis, as Abraham Lincoln in the big new Steven Spielberg film, Lincoln. It is out at the end of next week. Joining us right now from Los Angeles is Paul DeGarabedian of Hollywood.com. He got a very early viewing of Spielberg's Lincoln. Paul, welcome to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Tom.
What kind of film is this? Is it a battlefield film? Is it a parlor drama? What have we got here?
Well, if you're looking for action in the vein of Spielberg's Saving Private Ryan and that kind of war action, you're not going to get it. This is more of like what you just said, a parlor drama. It's very intense, very wordy, very talky, of course. This is all about the 13th Amendment and Lincoln's attempt to get it pushed through. And
this is the amendment that ended slavery in the Constitution.
Exactly. And it's riveting. When I saw the trailer, I actually thought, oh, I don't know about this. This looks kind of too costumey, too austere, that kind of thing. But it is riveting. And Day-Lewis, again, he's a shoo-in for another Oscar nomination. He's won two Oscars. He's brilliant in this role. He reminds me of a guitar player who just picks the perfect number of notes to get his point across. He's not over the top. He's very quiet. Very, you know, like controlled, and that makes it very interesting. You see a portrait of a Lincoln that we've never really seen before, and I think people will really enjoy this film.
I mean, some of it looks very familiar, Paul. The profile of Daniel Day-Lewis that is out in all the publicity shots looks just kind of staggeringly like that regal, long profile of Lincoln from the Lincoln Memorial, the sort of Lincoln in marble.
It's uncanny. Well, you know, Day-Lewis, he's one of these guys who, he doesn't do a lot of movies. You have to wait for his performances. You have to wait 2 or 3 years, and it's always worth the wait. But I got to tell you, as brilliant as his performance is, Tommy Lee Jones as Thaddeus Stevens, he kind of steals the movie, and I'm expecting an Oscar nomination for Best Supporting Actor for Tommy Lee Jones. He's that good. When you first see him with the wig and everything, it's kind of shocking, because back then they wore those wigs. But then he wins you over. He's so great. And he's unlike Day-Lewis, he's more over the top. He's chewing up the scenery in his own way. And it's really a beauty to watch.
Shelley Fields is Mary Todd Lincoln. We've got a big ensemble here. Of course, written by Tony Kushner, who wrote Angels in America, based on, in part, Doris Kearns Goodwin's team of rivals. So it's about him, what, working up in the midst of war, deep into the war, not long before his own death, working up against a lot of folks who say, don't push through this amendment ending slavery. Don't try and do it.
That's right. And it's sort of heartbreaking because you know what's going to happen eventually to Lincoln. And you watch how he really, you know, he's trying to change the face of the nation at a time when it was totally divided. And I think that's what makes it all the more riveting. And you get a real insight into the way politics worked back then. And it, of course, with the election coming up, it's perfectly timed in that way. A lot of parallels between then and now in terms of the divisiveness in government and trying to get an amendment through that, you know, clearly created a great physical divide in this country and also an emotional divide as well.
We've got a listener writing to us asking about Day-Lewis's portrayal of Lincoln. He says, I only hope the film captures Lincoln's hallmark characteristics, prudence, humor, I don't know, maybe the voice, he says, which was high-pitched with a pronounced Kentucky twang. What about it?
Yeah, well, Day-Lewis delivers on all fronts, and there is that voice there, and Spielberg shoots it in a way. I don't know how tall Day-Lewis is, but he appears much taller than everybody else in the movie. You just get this sense of the physical presence of the man and also the humor of the man. There are moments in the film where he just kind of sneaks up on you and he drops these lines. And, you know, Lincoln was known for his humor. And again, it's just a thing of beauty to look at, to see this character brought to life, somebody we all know and respect and grew up learning about. But this film, I think students will be watching this film. Younger people should, you know, definitely seek out this film, even though it plays in an entertaining way. This isn't just a history lesson. This isn't a boring, flat history lesson. It's Steven Spielberg bringing this character and these times to life. And it's just a terrific film, I think a shoo-in for multiple Oscar nominations.
We're going to hear a lot about history people may not know so well in this hour. Your Hollywood.com review has Lincoln sharing anecdotes, maybe from the period of his life that we are about to dive into. Your reporter writes, at times he's like Grandpa from the Simpsons, lost in his own anecdotes, much to the dismay of his cabinet.
Yeah, that's a great line. Our reviewer Matt Patches, wrote that, and you know, it is kind of funny that way because I think people are going to be somewhat divided on the film. There will be those who love the movie for its historical accuracy and that kind of thing. There'll be others who think maybe some of the things are a bit over the top or whatever. But at the end of the day, I think it's a terrific film. I think people are going to be talking about it. And for Spielberg, this is so different from something like Jaws or E.T. or Close Encounters. He's kind of coming full circle as a filmmaker. And Lincoln is, like War Horse before it, getting into different territory now, going more historical. And he's just a master filmmaker. And I think it's borne out in this movie.
A lot of humor and heart in Spielberg's Lincoln, Hollywood.com reports. And circus-like antics of Washington, D.C. of that time, says Hollywood.com, that feel all too close to home in this day and age. Paul DeGarabedian is president of Hollywood.com's box office division, joining us there from California. Paul, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Here's just a little more from that film out next week with the famous bit of the famous Gettysburg Address.
We here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, that government of the people, by the people, for the people shall not perish from the earth.
Daniel Day-Lewis as Abraham Lincoln and Steven Spielberg's Lincoln, and now to the story of how the real Lincoln came to be. His time as a circuit-riding lawyer traveling frontier Illinois. Attorney and scholar of Illinois' 8th Judicial Circuit, Guy Fraker, joins us. He's author of the new book, Lincoln's Ladder to the Presidency, the 8th Judicial Circuit. Guy Fraker, welcome to On Point. It is wonderful to have you.
Hi, Tom. It's very nice to be here.
I love the anecdote you open this book with. David Davis, his great friend and supporter out of Maryland and Massachusetts, in the deep of night trying to cross the Sangamon River with Abe Lincoln. Take us there, Guy.
Lincoln and Davis were riding the circuit between the little town of Sullivan and the town of Decatur. And they got a late start because court had gone late in the day, so they got to the river, the Sangamon River. It was spring. The river was swollen. And Lincoln suggested maybe they shouldn't try to get across it in the dead of night. And Davis said, well, I've got to be in court. So he plunges his horse into the river, swims the river, and gets to the other side, and there's nowhere to get out because of a high bank.
Yeah.
So he comes back, Lincoln's still sort of dismayed on the shore. Davis goes downstream some and then plunges in again, gets across the river, lights a fire on the other side, and Lincoln then knows where to go to get out. And, it tells a wonderful story about Davis, which is little known, of his agility on a horse in his young days, and, of course, of Lincoln himself, probably one of the greatest writers we ever had in the White House.
But for me, that anecdote in your introduction takes us right to this scene. I mean, horseback, circuit riders, attorneys in the middle of the night. Just another day in the 20-plus years that Abraham Lincoln spent in this booming frontier, going from almost no habitation to something much more significant, but really out in the elements of life here, Guy. I mean, there they are on the backs of their horses, swollen Sangamon River, crossing in the night just to get to court the next morning. It's pretty incredible.
It is an incredible story.
This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the years that made Abe Lincoln the man, the horseback courthouse river crossing years on the legal circuit in Frontier, Illinois, the long years before the presidency. Behind us right there, one of his favorite pieces, one of his favorite composers, Louis Moreau Gottschalk, one of Abraham Lincoln's favorites, and that in particular piece, The Union, performed here by Alan Marks. With us today, Guy Fraker. He's author of the new book, Lincoln's Ladder to the Presidency, the Eighth Judicial Circuit. There's an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. It's all about the many years that he spent riding months and months each year all over the frontier, opening up booming frontier of central Illinois. Guy Fraker, tell us about central Illinois at this time. And I should say, just to take down any pretense here, this is territory I know well. You and I are from the same town there, Bloomington Normal. My family's been there since 1818, so way back in just the time you're talking about. And these little towns are towns I know well. My dad grew up in Sullivan. I've spent time in Mahomet, Monticello, and Decatur, and all these. We've got a lot of crisscrossing awareness of one another here, Guy, but describe the Illinois of that time, Lincoln's young adulthood and mid-years.
The beauty of this as it relates to Lincoln and his growth is he was a raw-boned farmhand that when he arrived in the area of the circuit in 1830. Even when he became a lawyer in 1837, he was still fairly unpolished. The circuit was a frontier, a raw frontier. And the Lincoln and the circuit both grew together. And so by the time he left in 1860, it had been transformed to a fairly sophisticated place with colleges, with school systems, with libraries, with railroads. And Lincoln was this polished politician wearing his Brooks Brothers suit. So that parallel course is what made him.
See, he really grew up with the region's expansion. I mean, in those early years, of course, the family had come out of Kentucky and Indiana. His father had brought them into Illinois. He ended up on the Sangamon River there, New Salem. You describe a winter early on, and it's just amazing. This is the man who's later sat in that Brooks Brothers suit in the White House. He fell through the ice traveling across the Sangamon and the river, spent a week at the home of the Warnicks there, being nursed back to health by William Warnick's wife, who applied to Abraham Lincoln a mixture of bear grease, skunk oil, and rabbit fat to his frostbite injury to bring him back.
I don't know which would be worse.
but this is the genuine frontier item. Was he the self-taught lawyer that we understand him as?
He was, very much so. But the thing I love about him as a lawyer, being a lawyer myself here in central Illinois, he was a working lawyer. He was not a cause lawyer. You'll never see him taking cases. His future opponent for the nomination, Salmon Chase, advanced himself by becoming a cause lawyer for emancipation cases involving race. Lincoln actually took cases on both sides of the race issues. And he took case. He was a temperance advocate, and yet he took cases on both sides of that issue. He was a working lawyer, first come, first served, and was a very good lawyer, but not a student of the law in the sense that he read about it all the time. He learned what he learned and had to know for his cases.
Now, describe the circuit that he worked. My family showed up in 1818 in McLean County. That was just about the beginning of – it was the beginning of settlement in that county.
They were the first settlers. That's correct.
John Hendricks and the Dawsons there. But by the time 1837 that he began his practice, this was still a far from sort of put-together region. You've got him, as we heard, on horseback, on foot. And spending, 12 weeks, was it, every spring?
Yes.
And 12 weeks every fall? That's 6 months a year on the road when there was a road.
That's correct. Let me describe the circuit. It was 400 to 500 miles around at its largest, 14 counties, 10,000 square miles, twice the size of Connecticut. And they would, in spring, the spring and the fall, starting in March till virtually June 1st, and the fall starting in the middle of August till into November. They would ride from county seat, a prescribed set of counties defined by the legislature. One judge only, that was David Davis of Bloomington. One state's attorney, a wonderful character named David Campbell, a fiddle player who died from alcohol abuse ultimately. And Lincoln, and very few of the lawyers rode the whole circuit. Lincoln was one of the few. And they're out there. You can imagine the weather in central Illinois in March on horseback going 40 miles across tall grass prairie.
Yeah.
Just amazing. Just amazing.
And this was judge and lawyer and state's attorney all traveling together across rivers and prairies.
Exactly.
But they would show up and hear the cases. What kind of cases tended to come before them? What was the range?
All kinds of cases. And, of course, the cases were very simple to begin with. Half of a very mundane practice to us now, half his practice was collection work, both sides. There again, no agenda in any of these. He had divorces, both sides. He had the collection work I mentioned. He had a few personal injury cases.
He had slander cases.
Slander,
and that was more common then than now. Slander like
much
what?
Much more common. Well, that's interesting. The slander cases involving men related to their honesty. The slander cases involving women related to their chastity. And that was pretty much a pattern you can see through Lincoln's cases. He handled maybe 30 slander cases.
And people took those very seriously and went to court over, you slandered my honesty or my chastity.
Very much so. Very much so.
Where did they stay on this circuit? Was there a network of taverns there? You talk about the Nine Girls Tavern in Mahomet. I know Mahomet. Somebody had nine red-haired daughters there, so it was nine girls. But where did they generally stay?
Well, I've often wondered about if that's slightly a fiction that there were the nine daughters. You wonder what that tavern really was. But, they would stay. Some of the taverns were mediocre. Some were very rough. And they were. There was no connection. They weren't like a chain of motels. They were rough. Sometimes just log cabins. There's one up in Lexington, Illinois, up the road from us, where one of those cabins with a breezeway in the middle. Three beautiful daughters, by the way, and that family's still in Bloomington that ran that tavern. And it's nice. They have great stories about Lincoln there. But they went from that. The tavern down in Mount Pulaski, Illinois, was the food was awful. Davis said the only thing greasier than the food was the hair of the waitress. You know that?
Please.
It was amazing. It was amazing life. And it was fun. These guys, I liken it to a fishing trip, a bunch of guys on a fishing trip. The law business was serious business, but what the play was drinking, telling stories, and they had a great time in the taverns at night. And Lincoln, that's true. Lincoln was the center of all of that.
You know, when he was still back in New Salem, he actually boarded with my How Many Greats Aunt Polly Cameron there. And her,
really?
Yeah, for a while in New Salem. But here on the road, I'm thinking it takes, we think about the man who ended up in the White House with all that depth and wisdom. But even on this circuit, it takes a special kind of man to do this 6 months a year on this rough travel routine for years and years, for decades, literally.
Right.
You describe him as equipped physically. This was tough physically, but also emotionally. There was something about this that he liked, all that intimacy in the taverns at night, but also a kind of detachment in Abraham Lincoln, as I read you, Guy.
Very much. He is, as we all know, One thing I learned, by the way, is everything we, quote, know about Lincoln turns out to be true. His honesty, absolutely honest. But the hail fellow well met in the public setting of the taverns, mm-hmm. that we know. But also to his friends, cold and aloof, they described him. He was very much an independent person. He didn't rely on other people. He didn't really ever show himself to other people. So we have that complexity of him that makes him a fascinating person.
It's hard to put those together sometimes. The Cracker Barrel storyteller and jokester hardly sounds cold and aloof, and yet how do those live together, Guy?
Well, you can stand up in front of a bunch of people and tell jokes.
Mm-hmm.
You could, a lawyer can stand in front of a jury and relate to them in a personal way because you're not really, really relating to them. You're appealing to them at a public level,
right,
not a private level. And you can do the one without the other. I spoke, and I don't want to name the politician involved, but I spoke down in Lincoln, Illinois, mm-hmm. the town named for him before he was president.
Sure.
That part's true. And he came, in my audience was a prominent politician's right-hand man. So he comes up to me, says, "Fraker, I want to go have a beer with you. I want to talk about your talk."
Yeah.
And he's jumped on that. He said, "I can't believe what you're saying because our boss is the same. All his guys on staff can't believe how everybody thinks he's this amiable fellow. But privately, he's very cold and very much to himself."
Wow.
And I think maybe there's a vulnerability that politicians mm-hmm. feel that they're not going to let that guard down.
We'll look at the politics and also a little bit of the family history that may have built that personality of Abraham Lincoln, riding the 8th Judicial Circuit in Central Illinois. Guy Fraker has worked that circuit for years himself as an attorney in Central Illinois. He's out with a quite wonderful new book about the real kind of intimate details of the eventual great American leader coming up in that life. It's called Lincoln's Ladder to the Presidency. Guy, I've got lots of callers for you. Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania, Jim is calling. Hi, Jim, you're on the air with Guy Fraker.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I live near about 30 miles from Gettysburg, and if you go in the bookstores there, you see just scads and scads of books on Lincoln.
Absolutely.
It seems like there could never be a new one that is...
And here it is.
but here it is, yeah. My comments very briefly are, he's just endlessly fascinating there's no possible way he could ever be elected today because, you know, he flip-flopped on issues like slavery, which really, in his case, showed that he grew tremendously. And, you know, he represented big corporations and as well as small individuals. Can you imagine the negative ads that would have run against him? Unfortunately, there's no possible way he would ever have been... would ever be elected in this day and age.
Jimmy, you put a mouthful on the table there. Let us take those apart. The flip-flopping on, we'll look at slavery, who he represented, and then how he might play today. You know, Guy, let's go first to slavery, because you recount a moment when, younger in his life, when Lincoln had seen chained slaves, was it on the Ohio River, just
yes.
one after another? And
right.
What about him back and forth on that, and this part of the country? This part of the country itself was torn on slavery.
Yeah, that's a whole show in itself. But mm-hmm. in the first place, yes, the racism, one thing I underestimated was the racism in the North. The attitude essentially in Central Illinois, and I think this was reflected in many parts of the North,
mm-hmm.
was, you know, we don't, this slavery obviously is sort of a bad thing, but one thing you got to admit, it keeps them down there in the South so we don't have to put up with them here.
And there were a lot of Southerners who had migrated to Central Illinois,
That's
but there were
correct.
There were other populations as well. My people eventually were Germans who came in, had a little different perspective on this.
And that's where Lincoln, that's what the circuit did for him. It allowed him to have to juggle all points of view. But let me make one point on flip-flopping.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make it perfectly clear. Lincoln abhorred slavery his entire life. And so he never flip-flopped on slavery. He was conflicted because the Constitution was a contract where the South came into the Union because slavery was protected by the Constitution. So how do you get rid of this evil, evil institution and be true to the contract? And that's where Lincoln was torn. But he wanted to find a way to do this peaceably and not violating the contractual obligation that the North had to the South. So to say that he flip-flopped, he flip-flopped in the sense that he was letting his views out slowly and slowly and slowly because mm-hmm. he knew what he had to that he had to convert the racism of the North. So he could never be candid. If he were candid, he never would have been elected. And that's what appears to be flip-flopping.
Well, this was an insight for me in the pages of your book because you have him, you know, month after month on the trail, sitting over the Crackle Barrel, the tavern, in the courthouse, in the county courthouse steps, you name it, with folks who were anti-slavery and others who were straight-up racist, and he had to deal with them for many, many years. So when he arrived at the White House, he had dealt with the full spectrum of people very intimately over a long time.
That's true. And the other thing we see in Lincoln repeatedly is his magnanimity, and it's a quality we all should have. He had learned, maybe it was his nature to begin with, but on the other hand, he also learned that there were people that were pro-slavery that were decent, God-fearing people. So he never had the enmity for the South and for slaveholders that we see so often. And you mentioned Thaddeus Stevens. Thaddeus Stevens could never have been president of the United States.
This is Tommy Lee Jones' character in the new film.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. I'm anxious to see that portrayal. It sounds like he's almost the hero of the movie. Still be standing blowing in the wind if he didn't have this moderate Lincoln.
A flamboyant performance from Tommy Lee Jones we hear. Fred in White Plains, New York, you're on with Guy Fraker.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I can hardly wait to see this movie, and now that I've heard of this book, I can hardly wait to read it, too. I love reading about Lincoln. I always find something interesting about him. And one of my complaints about how Americans treat Lincoln is that we've made him into some kind of stone statue that we worship, but he was a man. And he wasn't just a man, he was a politician, and he was fascinating and as a man as well. You mentioned before his honesty and that he was an extremely honest mm-hmm. man, and I just wanted to address, is this something that he was willing to compromise through proxies? Because I read a book about his first campaign for the presidency, and apparently his followers printed up fake tickets so that they could stuff the, what did they call it back then, the wigwam? Stuff it with Lincoln supporters and keep the Seward supporters out who have the real tickets.
Fred, let us pick it up right here. Our time is short before the break. Guy Fraker, what about that story?
That story is true. As a matter of fact, there are two different supporters in Chicago at the convention that counterfeited tickets. But Lincoln's in Springfield. He had nothing to do with any of that. And to say he didn't even have an opportunity to sanction it because he was in Springfield, candidates didn't go to conventions. So that particular example, Lincoln had nothing to do with that. His supporters did pull a lot of stunts to get him elected.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about the years that made Abe Lincoln the man, the horseback courthouse river-crossing years of the legal circuit in Frontier, Illinois. Behind us right there, the Mississippi Steamboats in sight. Stephen Foster, piece played there by Sarah Davis Buechner. Guy Fraker joins us today. He's author of the new book, Lincoln's Ladder to the Presidency, the Eighth Judicial Circuit. And by that he means in central Illinois, starting in 1837 and for more than 20 years, 6 months a year, riding the prairie, crossing the rivers, before he went to the White House. You can read an excerpt of the book, quite fine book, at our website, onpointradio.org. The whole idea of distance in those days, Guy, I mean, you remind us that he had taken, a riverboat full of goods down to New Orleans and then walked home as a young man.
Amazing. Yeah, that's an amazing. We just can't even get our hands around that.
It takes us places we really don't understand, but he was accustomed, and this wasn't with Nike Air, this was with old leather boots or who knows what to get back
home.
Yeah,
exactly.
A different time. We've got a lot of questions here coming in online, but I want to be sure that we get to what you see as the core attributes that he took out of this Eighth Judicial Circuit experience year after year after year, that he took from that central Illinois frontier to the White House, the war, and all the rest. What did it hone in him?
Well, for one thing, the way it honed him is needs to be emphasized. You're riding across 20 miles of prairie all day long. You've got a lot of time to think. And in our lives, if we think about it, none of us ever take the time to think because we're too busy. So Lincoln's out there on this horse, and he would frankly drift away from his comrades and just and think. And he learned human nature out there. He learned that to be objective and to not jump to conclusions. As a lawyer, he took both sides of issues, so he had a marvelous talent to see both sides, as we see so reflected in the second inaugural. He was part of nature, so I think he had a spiritual side, if not religious, and that's another whole topic, but he ended up, I think, with a deep belief in God, but he was a spiritual man. And he saw racism for what it was and was perhaps a racist himself, but that he evolved, as he did on so many subjects, he evolved to a different man on issues of race by the time of the assassination than he was, say, when he ran against Stephen A. Douglas in 1858. And so all of this kept molding him and molding him. And then the other thing that isn't so much shaping him, but I suppose it did, was the talent he developed on the circuit to network. That's been pretty much ignored. I think Goodwin's book, because she deals with relationships within the cabinet, Goodwin's book deals with networking.
This is Team of Rivals, Doris Kearns Goodwin.
Right. But what we see with Lincoln, as you look at the towns, that as he went to these 14, 15 towns, these county seats, he represented the most important person in every town.
And off of the railroads to our earlier caller's question.
That was a great part of that question. Both sides with the railroads. But he represented the biggest clients because he was out to make a living. That was his goal. He represented the most important people in the town. He was acquainted with the most important people. And nonpartisan. He didn't care if they were Democrats. So that's something he learned from the circuit. But this network that he built over these many years was the network then. These guys, almost all circuit lawyers led by their judge that went to Chicago and captured the nomination at the Republican convention in 1860.
Well, look at that. This is a time before Chicago had come to really dominate that region that was the center of Illinois, that was the center of activity. Steve in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Steve, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. When you play the clip from Daniel Day-Lewis, the first thing that came to mind was what I had heard. Lincoln had a high-pitched, unpleasant voice, and so I Googled that, and sure enough, there it was. So it seems that Spielberg initially captured that. But it brings the questions to the fore, how Lincoln would have done in a media age, and also how do you become one of history's most famous and successful orators with a high-pitched, unpleasant voice?
Yeah, let us look at that, Steve. The voice of Abraham Lincoln. Here's a little bit more of Daniel Day-Lewis in Spielberg's film coming out next week. Just a few seconds here, but you can see him playing it here pretty high.
Abolishing slavery by constitutional provision settles the fate for all coming time.
Well, okay, high, but by no means annoying. It doesn't sound like a marble statue speaking, but it sounds like a real man. What do we know about his voice, guy?
That's entirely accurate, and I think that's fairly common knowledge of the people that read about Lincoln as a campaigner. But the advantage in those days was his voice carried very well. And in those debates, for example, and we should be ashamed of this now, as illiterate as we are with our soundbite society, but they would speak for, he and Douglas spoke for an hour and a half each in those debates, and there were thousands and thousands of people there, and his voice had to carry, and that high-pitched voice, rather than being irritating, actually carried very well, and he modulated it, and he would start slow, and he would build, and he would build, and they talk about how his emotion would catch on. At first, it wasn't exactly annoying, but it was just, you weren't particularly anxious to listen to it, and then but that was sort of a setup for as he built on his speeches and as the emotion took over.
Spielberg, among the many, many, many Americans obsessed with Abraham Lincoln, has spent years thinking and studying him. We'll see how he's directed Daniel Day-Lewis here. Let's get a call from Suwanee, Tennessee. Carly's calling. Hi, Carly. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom and Guy. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes. What's on your mind?
I think one thing that I've been concerned about with the Daniel Day-Lewis film, which I've been looking forward to for a long time, I'm a Northwestern graduate, so very familiar with Illinois and its love of Lincoln. But the one thing I've been concerned with is how they're going to portray Lincoln. Are they going to portray him as the great emancipator or the great equalizer? I think as a historian, you have to recognize that he was a great emancipator, but as Guy had talked about a little bit earlier, maybe was a little bit racist himself and did evolve over time, but still was not, he was not an equalizer. And I think that's something that's very important to history and very important for us to know about his history.
Carly, you raise that very well indeed, and maybe more than a little racist by our current standards. On the other hand, you've got to respect the man for what he did, as you say, with emancipation. If I may, Carly, let me hold that for one moment and get one more on this theme, I think, from New Orleans down Louisiana. Glenn, you're on the air.
Yes, I'd like to know, did Abraham Lincoln ever say that a black person was not equal to him? And what did he really mean by that? And also, what was his relationship with Frederick Douglass?
We'll pick it up. Thank you very much, Glenn and Carly. All right, let's come back to race. You hear Glenn's straightforward question. Did he say that a black man was not equal to him? Now, I think we've got a listener, Wahoo, online here, quoting at length from the fourth debate with Stephen Douglas, where if this is a correct quote, and it looks like it to me, you know, Lincoln goes on at some length. He says, I will say then that I am not nor have ever been in favor of bringing about any way the social political equality of the white and black races. And, you know, I'm not or ever in favor of making voters or juries of Negroes, nor of qualifying them to hold office, nor to intermarry with white people. But he goes on to say, I say upon this occasion, I do not perceive that because the white man is to have the superior position, the Negro should be denied everything. Well, that's a long way from equality, is it not, Guy?
It is. Now, let me say a couple of things about that. Lincoln, as a trial lawyer, was noted by one of his principal opponents that he would often give away 6 points to win the seventh.
Mm.
And the issue, we forget now,
mm-hmm.
people were in chains. So how important was it whether they were equal in civil rights, whether they could vote, till they were out of their chains? And that was the issue in 58. Should they be free? The Declaration, Stephen A. Douglas race baited Lincoln over and over and over. The Declaration of Independence did not apply to African Americans, said Douglas. Lincoln said the Declaration of Independence applies to all men.
Mm.
But now when it came to civil rights, was he pandering to the electorate in that campaign?
Mm-hmm.
Or was he saying what he thought?
I mean, frankly, that was only 3 years before his presidency. What's your conclusion?
I think at that time he meant that. I'd rather have him be honest than pandering. But you got to remember this evolution that took place with him, and it was primarily because of the heroic efforts of black troops. A lot of mm-hmm. Americans did not want blacks to fight in the war. Lincoln put them into the war. Now you say, well, that was for more
he
troops.
Needed them. Mm-hmm.
They needed them, but it was more than that. If I'm going to free these people by my Emancipation Proclamation, they should have the right to fight for their own freedom. And Lincoln, their courage converted him. So we have him at the end of his life. The last speech he gave, he proposed that for certain blacks, and that was a matter probably of lawyers, who knows what he meant because he didn't have a chance mm-hmm. to ever go on, mm-hmm. but for certain blacks, they should vote. And it is said by Michael Burlingame, who writes my foreword and is the top Lincoln expert mm-hmm. in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Burlingame says he was the first victim of the civil rights movement because John Wilkes Booth turned to a companion and says, okay, that does it. I've had enough. Because when Lincoln announced that he thought blacks should vote. So it was an ongoing project. And I've got one final thing. John Hope Franklin is one of the first great and longtime African-American historians.
Yes, indeed.
And I had occasion to attend a program that he gave where he alluded to this quote that Lincoln gave. That was in Charleston, Illinois. And he said, do not judge Abraham Lincoln's attitude on race by what he said in 58. Judge him by the second inaugural. Judge him by his speeches at the end of his presidency. Mm-hmm.
And the real end would come too soon. Kendall in Lincoln City, Indiana. Kendall, thanks very much for calling.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Ms. Fraker.
Hello.
We are very excited here at Lincoln Boyhood National Memorial to see the film, and I look forward to having a chance to look at your book as well. Though I want to point out at least one area where we may have some disagreement. I kind of feel like the cart may be a little in front of the horse when we talk about Lincoln becoming the man in Illinois.
Because some Indiana pride rises here, inevitably, of course. Yeah, what do you think, Kendall?
Well, there is some pride there, of
sure,
course. But I would argue, too, that you know he didn't deliver the Gettysburg Address here. He didn't even write it here. But it is here that he learned to write it and that he developed the content, really, for that. And, you know, from 7 to 21, I think some of the most important elements of his life actually happened here, but we get often overlooked as a formative part of his life.
But certainly the emotional and early education. I mean, his mother died, his sister died, his stepmother brought him his books, his famous reading by candlelight, firelight, lots of Indiana history.
Right, and I would argue that one of the most important stories of his life occurs here when he was just a teenager. That may have been the real tipping point that put him on the path to becoming the president that we later, you know, talk so much about.
Well, lots of stories from Indiana as well, and we'll get to more of them one day, Kendall. I don't want to give them short shrift at all. We just happen to be riding the circuit today, but I'm very glad for your call and also for Carly and Glenn earlier on these tough questions about race and racism. There's much to study and meditate on there, but take us to his inner core group, if you would. Guy, our time grows short, but here's this David Davis, who was the big judge, literally big, 300 pounds at one point later on, but crossing the rivers earlier in his life. This is a Maryland-born, Kenyon College, New Haven Law School, studied law in Lenox, Massachusetts, brought a wife out from Massachusetts, but came the kind of jetpack on Abraham Lincoln's career ultimately. How did that happen?
He was the judge. And he rode through to all these counties. He and Lincoln became very close. But there again, Lincoln would be, given this networking ability that I refer to, he would be close to the circuit judge. Now, none of the lawyers complained about their relationship, so that tells you something about mm-hmm. the honesty of both men. But he was extremely affable, but he also was a stern ruler of that courtroom. And he was the perfect guy to be the captain of the team or the quarterback of the team that went to Chicago.
Why did they support Lincoln so avidly? Why did they so want to see him go from Central Illinois to the White House?
Well, part of that, if I've been involved in politics and you get to identify with a candidate and it becomes a personal matter. Mm-hmm. So that's a very small part of it. All candidates have that. Lincoln had, and we can't know him, of course. But he must have had a magnetism and a charisma that I hope Day Lewis portrays and catches. Because there's a lawyer, Leonard Swett, one of the circuit writing friends, mm-hmm. who never got anything from Lincoln, and yet he would. If Lincoln said go lay down on the street, I think he would have. He would do anything for him, promoting him.
Guy, what do you find yourself in this campaign season wishing that our presidential candidates had today that Abe Lincoln brought with him from that long experience on the circuit?
I would say humility. Lincoln's humility, confidence and humility is a deadly combination, and he had both of those things.
Deadly in a good sense, you're saying.
Yes,
here.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then I think honesty. I really do. There's just... And the media maybe is the villain of this to an extent, but we just never hear any real honest statements from politicians. And a good example is the earlier broadcast, you had climate mm-hmm. problems. Mm-hmm. It's not even being talked about in this campaign because it's too hot an issue. So neither one of these men will talk about that hot issue. And Lincoln, there he was in Central Illinois, just slowly pushing away for black freedom. In the teeth of this hostility to blacks. So,
is there a counterpart type in our country today? I mean, here he was, poor, on the frontier, literally came up from hardscrabble cabin, became president. Who would that be today? Is that somebody who lives, I don't know, a Hispanic kid down on the Texas border with Mexico? Or is there a counterpart? And is there a ladder up like Lincoln's today?
I don't think so. The reason for my book, I want to make it clear, it's a colorful, wonderful book about these stories of riding the circuit, but it's more than that. I feel that it's the place that he had to be to become president, and I don't know that those circumstances exist anymore.
It's kind of tragic to think
it is.
If we got this much horsepower out of an American from that setting, that we can't have a ladder like that today. That in itself worth a lot of meditation, along with everything else here, power and politics, that contemplative rider of the circuit, and the life shaped there on the prairie. Guy Fraker, it's a terrific book, Lincoln's Ladder to the Presidency, the Eighth Judicial Circuit. We so thank you for steeping yourself in this history and bringing it to us. Thank you so much, Guy.
Thank you, Tom. It's been a pleasure.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Thanks for joining us. This is On Point.